This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Graduation ceremonies are being held all across the country, with new graduates about to either continue their educations or enter jobs and begin their working lives. But while they may have diplomas or degrees in hand, many of them won't have the financial knowledge they need to successfully navigate the world of credit, cash, and debt. From creating a budget to paying off school loans to avoiding falling deeply in debt, this afternoon we'll discuss what new graduates should know about finances. Joining me this afternoon, local financial advisor Chris DeSimeo, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Chris, good to see you this afternoon.
Well, it's always good to be here. We had a little traffic situation on the way down. I-71 was shut down to one lane. Car on fire at the Norwood Lateral southbound. But thanks to Ann Thompson, whom I called, who kind of relayed that to me, I was able to make appropriate plans in the detour department to get here.
So is that still going on, as far as you know, Chris?
They were loading the burned out shell of the car onto a flatbed truck as I was getting back onto the highway near the Kennedy Connector.
Okay. So might possibly still be causing problems at this point.
Oh, probably. The backup is, you know, way up the hill past Kennedy. But, you know, it's interesting because there are really a lot of similarities and connections between a traffic jam and what happens to people's money, especially when they are in school and get out of school.
You know, and that's true. And I think one of the issues, Chris, is you know, just how big is this gap in financial literacy? I mean, it seems like it's pretty huge for kids. They just don't get the experience and the information they need early on.
No, the word chasm comes to mind because it is it's something that people don't feel comfortable talking about. It's not just here in the Midwest, but people generally don't talk about money, and parents are too busy usually making money on their own to impart financial wisdom to their kids. Or mom and dad may have had some problems in the past with money and might be too embarrassed, don't want their kids to know what mom and dad have done or the mistakes mom and dad may have made. And so there's this transmission gap in addition to that. And of course, a lot younger people sometimes are more susceptible to peer pressure. And whether you're in, you know, junior high school, or even in college, you might hear things or read things or see things and not have the tools to understand when you're really getting good information. And so financial literacy is one of the hot topics these days.
Well, and the financial climate is different for kids today, isn't it? I mean, it's a lot different compared to previous generations.
It is. Well, think about what going to school costs now. I mean, just even think if you're in a private high school, a private elementary school, you're spending a lot. Mom and dad are spending a lot of money. There's more information out there. There's all sorts of information available to anybody with who can go to a library and log into the internet, whether it's from a handheld device or from a desktop or a recycled device like what we just had on. When you think about it, there are a lot of people who see information and aren't quite sure what to do with it. And so it's easier to get in trouble.
You know, and also there's the pressure of student loan debt. I mean, that's just exploded. I mean, it's over $1 trillion, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is. And with the cost of a college education rising, it's been going up for a long, long time. And with the dollars involved, and if someone should go on and get an advanced degree, now you're talking serious money. And there are some resources available, and a lot of them are through we went to a website earlier. It was the CFP board of consumer advocacy. The College for Financial Planning has a consumer advocate, and she's written a lot of fabulous articles that are posted on their Wall Street Journal articles.
Yeah, so certified financial planner Eleanor Blaney.
Yes.
And she is joining us. She's, as Chris was saying, consumer advocate with the CFP Board of Standards. And Eleanor, good afternoon. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you today.
Hi, Eleanor. Good. Thanks for joining us. You know, you've written quite a bit. You're published frequently in the Wall Street Journal, And these are just great, great articles. And a number of years ago, I heard a story on Morning Edition where they were talking about the marshmallow test and how that is used to describe how young people look at money. It's kind of a famous test that was done at Stanford, as you pointed out in one of your articles. And yet you commented that perhaps it didn't go far enough. What were some of you, how would you have conducted the marshmallow test?
Well, no, I think it's a great test. And for your listeners, you know, you can go on YouTube and find a clip from the marshmallow test. And I really recommend you do it. It's great fun watching these little children try to resist the temptation of one marshmallow sitting right in front of them. For those of you who may not be familiar with it was a test that was done, a long time ago, actually, at Stanford University. And there were about 600 4 to 6 year olds, I believe. And they, each of them was brought into a room, and on the table in front of them was this one tantalizing marshmallow. And an adult said to them, "Okay, you've got a choice. You can either eat the marshmallow now, or you can wait until I come back, and then you get two." So if you go on YouTube and look at this, you're going to see these kids just sweating and fidgeting and sitting on their hands and petting the marshmallow. They're doing all sorts of things to try to resist.
I'm imagining
it.
Art Linkletter right now.
Oh, it is just priceless. So you get a good laugh. But basically, and this was an exercise, I believe it was called formally deferred gratification. And how well are we equipped by nature, by nurture, to delay what we want now and put things aside for the future. And as we know, Americans are not necessarily the best at that. The Japanese, yes. The Chinese, in fact, I'm reading more and more articles about the Chinese that they're not spending money, they're sucking it away. But we're not so good in that department.
It's
so obviously one message for children or one financial literacy message is, how do you defer gratification or delay gratification? My comments on that, just very quickly, I think it's a great exercise, and there's a lot to be learned from it. But I think there's a more important message, and that is for many children, and I don't know if you all have kids and have been through this. I certainly have. And the issue is that many children see money as for one reason only. They see it as, you know, something to spend or something to save, but more likely they see it as something to spend. I remember my daughter would get $10 for a birthday present or $20 for a birthday present, and then it became her mission to go out and find something that cost $20 to spend it on.
Right.
And the issue here is our kids need to learn that there are, actually, I talk about it in the article in the Wall Street Journal, and I talk about fungibility. They really need lessons in fungibility, and it's a great, you know, squishy, marshmallowy term, fungibility. But it simply refers to the ability of money to be used for different purposes at the same time. You know, you can substitute one for the other. It's not, you know, your purposes of money are not mutually exclusive. And if we teach our kids that when you get money, you can save it, you can spend it, and you can give it. And it's really an exercise in and rather than you can either save it or spend it. So I watched the agony of these little kids not eating that marshmallow, and I thought, you know, what we really need to teach them is you can have some now, but you also need to put some aside for later. And then finally, there's the importance of giving. So the idea of actually taking that marshmallow, dividing it into three or however you want to divide it, it's all fungible, and you can do three different things with it. And I think children really need to understand all of those uses when they get a gift of money and be encouraged to, you know, use a little bit. Yeah, go ahead and spend it now. That, you know, some of it. But remember, some of it has to be set aside.
You know, I would have flunked the marshmallow test, Eleanor, big time. I'm kind of looking at this from the kid's perspective. I mean, I'm just getting started down the road of life. I have all kinds of time to make these financial decisions, don't I?
Well, definitely. And actually, that brings up another, trying to get even young adults to save. And as you say, I mean, you know, they can't see that the future is now. And, I mean, that's one of the privileges of the young, right? They have, you know, so much time and so many possibilities. So how you rain on their parade and get them to be, you know, sober in the psychological sense, you know, and prudent, wise investors, it's a tough sell, right?
It is. And, you know, and Eleanor, you are, of course, the consumer advocate for the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards. And one of the things that financial planning involves, it's gone from just being, you know, spreadsheets and tables and lots of numbers to really embracing a kind of a holistic, family-oriented way of making sure that people, you know, do the right thing with their resources. What are some of the mistakes, the most common mistakes in the financial planning world that you see that parents and perhaps even grandparents might make in trying to transmit good financial habits to the next generations?
Well, I'm going to answer that question in a little bit of a contrary way. I think the biggest mistake that parents and grandparents and caretakers are making is not trying to instill good money habits. I think it's something that in our busy, busy lives, we often fail to talk to our kids about. You know, we may assume or hope that the schools are doing it, but I assure you they are not. And the mistake is not taking advantage of the times and places where we can talk about money. You know, even going through a drive-through and having the conversation about choices.
Mm-hmm.
How many of us, you know, kids today, they believe that money comes from an ATM machine.
yes, they do.
And they've never been in a bank, and it's, you know, we have a problem in this country that there are many, many young people or populations that do not have a banking relationship. And therefore, they're not understanding how our money and our money system works. And, you know, why not, rather than just driving up to the ATM and pulling out that week's grocery money or whatever it is, walk the child into the bank and do a little bit of explaining as to the function of the bank and what's going on. Other ideas, you can sit down with your kids when it's time to pay bills. You can have them open the bills, you know, the stuff we get in the mail. Maybe get them to circle, you know, something on the bill, the amount or the date or the pay-by date. Just get them involved in the day-to-day financial management. I mean, it is amazing because young kids are going to college and they never had a checkbook, have no idea how to use it. They have a debit card or a credit card, and they think that the, you know, the credit limit on their credit card is money that actually was, you know, is their money.
Right.
As opposed to debt.
Right. And
there's just these basic financial transactional knowledge that we could be talking about with our kids and using that as the platform to share with them if we have good values around money, you know, our hopes and dreams for them, for their financial life.
Yeah. Eleanor, you've, in your writings, which are archived on the Wall Street Journal website, too, you had some advice for college graduates that I thought was very interesting about how they should go about setting up house.
Right. And I've got to remember exactly what I say. I have a lot to say to them, and I certainly said a lot to my own daughter.
sort of like, in other words, just pretend you haven't graduated yet. Don't be tempted to go out and get horribly into debt, among other things.
Right.
Absolutely. You know, even once you're on your way out in the real world, you know, live like a grad student or live like an undergrad, and for at least a while. To me, the agenda for a college student who's just graduating is, and with a lot of debt, is you now have to figure out how to take that human capital. What you now have debt. And, you know, strictly speaking, an accountant would look at your balance sheet and tell you you're bankrupt because you probably have more student loans than the value of your car. And, you know, that's your one asset and your one liability and your student loan, anything you own. And they'd say you're bankrupt. But in fact, no, you are rich in human capital. And what is human capital? That's all that training. That's all that education that you've gotten. At college, it is in fact the potential that you take into the workplace to turn it into income and money, and it's huge. It can be huge, and your job now is to make the most of that human capital. The reason anyone was even willing to lend you the money, when you, in fact, are technically, from an accounting point of view, bankrupt, you don't have a home, you don't have any assets, you just have the debt, you have the loan, but the reason somebody would be willing to make you a loan when you're not worth anything is because of the potential.
Yeah, great
because
point.
Because they realize that you're going to be going into the workplace. So your job is to really do that right and get smart about continuing to invest in your workplace or your career knowledge, continuing to invest in the networking and continuing to invest in ways to make you a prime contributor to your career or workplace.
Yeah, great point.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. And let's talk with David in Lebanon. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon. Great topic today. Thanks for putting it on.
You're welcome. Thanks, Dave.
My youngest son, who's a sophomore in college, actually sat us down a month or two ago and he said, okay, how does all this work? What's a 401k? How does a mortgage mm-hmm. work? How does all this work? He said, nobody in school taught us any of this, and he was just really at a loss. So the irony here is that I'm in the financial services industry, and really felt somewhat ashamed that I hadn't done this with him earlier.
Well, I think a lot of us are shoemakers whose children don't have shoes. I know that dilemma, and we all can be forgiven a little bit. But it's absolutely the case. I mean, our schools are not teaching it, and financial literacy is kind of a national crisis, quite honestly.
Well, and even more ironic is my older son graduated from UC with a degree in accounting, and when he got his first full-time job, he said, okay, what's a 401k? How does this work? Should I, you know, contribute mm-hmm. to this? Mm-hmm. And, of course, so we had a long discussion about that as well, and he also, as I said, he has an accounting degree. So there's mm-hmm. really a lack of this basic education when it comes to financial planning, financial services, everything from a mortgage to a car loan on up. And it's something that I think parents, first rule, but you did say there can always be some embarrassment in there. But hopefully some schools are, you know, offer some classes in this along the way.
David, thank you for your comments.
Yeah, thanks, David.
Yeah, I have two resources to mention. If you're taking inviting some suggestions,
yes,
here.
Please.
One would be the CFP board has a consumer-facing website that is called letsmakeaplan.org, and that is for consumers, and there are all sorts of financial topics that are discussed, and I contribute to a blog on the site, as well as I believe we have 50 or so CFP ambassadors around the country who also submit articles. So that would be a go-to place to learn more about, you know, financial planning and concepts. The Foundation for Financial Planning, that also is an organization that in fact is dedicated to more of the pro bono work that is done in the financial planning profession. But I believe that they have curriculum that school PTAs can, you know, request for their high school students or possibly junior high. So that's another place. And again, you could Google Foundation for Financial Planning.
So that teachers, you know, at any level, can then go to that website. Would you mind repeating that one more time?
I don't have the website, but I would imagine it's foundationforfinancialplanning.org or gov, or not gov. It wouldn't be.
It'd be .org probably.
.org. It's a nonprofit, and they are very much advocating financial literacy education and pro bono types of efforts to get the public more financially sophisticated and aware and capable.
Yeah, I know the first website that you mentioned, Eleanor, we do have a link to that on WVXU.org. Chris, Jennifer sent us an email, and she says she wishes she had started maxing out her 401k as soon as she had access to one. Is it ever too early, Eleanor and Chris, to start in saving for retirement?
Yeah, Eleanor, that is a great question. What happens? I mean, sometimes do people getting out of school start? It's a great idea to save in the 401k, but how do you allocate what you're not going to spend to retirement or getting your first house or saving up money to buy a car? How does a recent college graduate figure out how much to put into each of these future marshmallow buckets?
Well, you know, you're absolutely, you've nailed it. This is the question that's on their minds. And often, you know, when I've talked to young people, inevitably the question is, well, I've got debt. You know, it may be the student loan debt. It may be credit card debt. You tell me I should have an emergency fund, and you're telling me to max out on my 401k. Well, which is it? You know, I can't do everything. What should I do? And, Chris, as well as I do, that it always depends. You know, it depends on the circumstances and so forth. But here's my kind of rule of thumb, and that is, well, I want to understand about the debt first, your debt. And is it a problem, okay? Have you been mismanaging debt such that you've got a bad credit score, when you've got a bad credit report? Because to my mind, the other things, the emergency fund and the 401k, they're all... First of all, you know, we would want you contributing as much as you can to all of them, but we know you can't. So the debt impacts just about everything. So, for example, employers now are looking for people with financial integrity. I know that's true in my profession of financial services, but I think it's true, you know, kind of across the board.
Sure.
They want to know that the people they're hiring have financial discipline and integrity. Now, while they can't necessarily get your credit score, they can look at a report. And if you are not managing debt well, that actually can impact your prospects for employment.
Interesting. And insurance, among other things.
Absolutely. Exactly. And insurance, and it can impact your getting that car. It can impact whether you're going to get a rental place in New York City for that great job. It's kind of like it can bring everything tumbling down. So I feel it's important for those people who really have a problem to try to deal with the debt
first.
Yeah, so avoiding debt and dealing with debt, those would be that's your big starting point.
If you have a problem, okay, but if you have a good credit score, then the advice would be, for the 401k, you don't necessarily, if you've got a lot of competing, you do have some debt to pay down or whatever, you definitely want to contribute up to your employer's match. So if you have an employer that you know, if you contribute 4%, they match all of that. You know, they match up to 4%. You definitely want to do that, because, as I say, that's like a pile of money on the sidewalk, and would you choose to walk over it? Would you just go and not pay attention to it? No.
I'd pick up most of it.
Yeah.
I think
yeah,
I'd
don't leave that money
up.
On the table. Yeah, don't leave that money on the table. You know, unfortunately, time flies by when you're having a lot of fun, and then we've run out of time. Eleanor and Chris, thank you so much for joining
you're
us
welcome.
This afternoon.
You're very welcome.
Certified financial planner Eleanor Blaney, consumer advocate with the CFP Board of Standards, and also local financial advisor Chris DeSimeo. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier with help from Jim Nolan. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.